Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Live in Los Angeles on a Friday, we're loaded. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Spencer Dinwiddie, NBA player, Brooklyn, going to be joining us this hour. Peter Guber, who's a minority owner in the Dodgers, the Warriors, Mandalay Entertainment, one of the smartest guys right now in America in terms of sports and entertainment, is going to be joining us. Tom Izzo, Michigan State coach. Joy Taylor is joining me. We keep being sort of, we marvel at how many good topics there are despite no sports. I do feel like, I really do, and I have in the last couple of days, I'm seeing new information from the CDC on infection rates and where this thing is going. I'm feeling much more positive. The weather is getting warmer. I like feel positive today. Like I can sense sports is coming really soon.
It does, and it feels like it's starting to be summer, you know, despite the fact that we thought the summer was canceled.
It's here.
Yeah.
Close.
It's creeping up on us.
Yeah.
So everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, so do I. So let me start with this. Ed Werder is somebody I trust. Ed Werder says there's a deal to be made with Dak Prescott. He believes it's going to get done. He's going to make $35 million a year. Cowboys and Dak, and a lot of people are denying the $45 million. You know, it's PR spin. But he's going to make $35 million a year. You know, that doesn't work for me, but I'll just say this. Dak Prescott, according to Fox Bet, is worth 4 points more per game than Andy Dalton. That seems fair. More than a field goal. Of course, the contract will be 10 times more than Andy Dalton. Make of it what you will. $35 million for Dak. There's two reasons it concerns me. One, his entire career, he's had a top three offensive line and a top two running back in the league and above average weapons. I've never seen him struggle. Oh, wait, I have. Tyron Smith got hurt. He was terrible. Zeke was out. He wasn't very good. Pre-Amari Cooper, not special. The times I've seen him not have everything right in support, he has struggled. And last year, he struggled against good teams. Everybody's good in life when you're a trust fund kid, you're the only child, you get the time, you get the attention, life's way easier. What if you're one of five kids struggling to grab the final piece of pizza? With Dak, his life has been trust fund kid. It's been best offensive line, best running back, offensive coach, above average weapons. PFF says the wide receiving core is number three. So his NFL life has been that of the trust fund kid. Just don't wreck the Mercedes. It's just been nothing but fun and daisies. He's had two horrible teams in his division. Giants and Washington, 16 games against him, he's 13-3. It's been easy street. I have no idea, and I'm now going to pay him $35 million. Travis Frederick's gone. Tyron Smith, what if he gets hurt? The times where I've seen him lose key offensive components, he deteriorates fast. Scares me. Second thing is, $35 million for a quarterback is an elite price tag. He's a good quarterback. He's averaging in his career, this again, with a great O-line, a great running back, great receivers. He's averaging 24 touchdowns, 9 picks, and 3,900 yards. That's good. It ain't $35 million a year good. It's not that good. So that's my concern. I do not care that he was underpaid early in his career. That's not my problem. Be a higher draft pick. The entire league. Do you know how underpaid Lamar Jackson is right now? Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson for 4 years. If you play early in the NFL as a quarterback, you're going to get underpaid. You're going to be massively underpaid. Josh Allen's massively underpaid. They're all underpaid. Baker Mayfield may be a little overpaid, not a cheap shot, just true. But all these guys are. Lamar Jackson makes $10 million a year. He was the MVP. MVP should be making $38 million a year. He'll get his money over time. Dak on the cheap. Remember, Dak's been on the cheap for all these years. One playoff win. On the cheap. So now you got to make cuts. So Dallas is essentially saying, we're going to go the opposite way of the New England Patriots. Dallas is saying, no, we know what we're doing. The Patriots don't know what they're doing. We're going to pay all our top stars top dollar. So the Cowboys with Dak will have a top five quarterback contract, a top five running back contract, a top five wide receiver contract and a top five defensive end contract and a very expensive offensive line. And Jalen Smith is great, but he's not cheap. That's the opposite of what the Patriots do. And Zeke, the most replaceable position, is the only one of those players that you would consider top two or three in the league at his position. So you're essentially paying guys more than you would argue in a salary cap sport their value probably is. So, you know, this is the opposite of what New England did. And I know I hear this all the time. Well, he deserves. Folks, find me a 50-year-old in America that doesn't think they were underpaid in their 20s. 20s, it's a rite of passage. You'll be underpaid. Interns, you probably won't be paid. You start making good money in your 30s, hopefully. Great money in your 40s and 50s. And then at 60, you better have saved some of it. Everybody in this league is underpaid in their 20s until their first contract. And I don't think you deserve a Powerball ticket because you were underpaid. It depends on how good you are in those years leading up to the big contract. Dak's been good, not great, and he was bad at the end of last year. And by the way, once again, Dallas dominates the offseason. They did this last year. It should be noted in their own division, Philadelphia had two issues. Cornerback, they addressed it with Darius Slay. Some argue the best pure corner in football. Wide receiver, they draft one. Marquise Goodwin, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson's coming back. They addressed their two issues. Dallas, defense. Secondary, bad. They lost their best corner. Secondary, bad. Lost a good safety. Lost a leading sacker. So Dallas did not address their primary issues. They drafted a wide receiver in the first round. It's the last thing they needed. I'm sure CeeDee Lamb will be productive, but it's not what they needed. So, again, Philadelphia quietly brought in Darius Slay, arguably the best corner, for a real weakness, and massively upgraded and addressed their wide receivers. Dallas's problem was defense. It is clearly worse today. But hey, we're talking about the Cowboys. They're winning the press conference. They're the most interesting team. They're the most captivating team. I do not think they got better. I think they'll be thin. I think they'll have no depth. And I'm happy for Dak because I'm happy for all young people to get their money. I never root against the individual. But once you have a salary cap, it's a business. You know, in baseball, you can overpay a guy. I mean, if you have good revenue streams on the YES Network for the Yankees, you could pay a guy $2 or $3 million more. The salary cap makes it a business, and it's a pretty hard cap in the NFL. It's not like the NBA. You got exceptions and exemptions, and it's pretty much a hard cap. You pay this guy, you can't pay that guy. Good luck to Dallas. So I like choices in life. I like choices. Just give me choices. I don't want to be told I have to do this. I want the option to do this or this, and then it comes to me because I like the responsibility of choices. I saw a study the other day that 73% of Americans would rather flip a coin than make a tough decision themselves. I'm the opposite of that. I want choices, I'll make decisions, and I'll live with my bad decisions. But I want the decision. The NFL is voting next week to give coaches a decision, and I hope it passes. The NFL is saying you can still do the onside kick, but you can also take the ball at your own 25, fourth and 15. If you get a first down, you keep the ball. Now, if you fail, it's over because the other team takes it, couple plays, field goal or touchdown. But this is why the NFL, one of the reasons they're king. Fast, adapt, move, PAT, catch rule, change, change, change. This is great. You don't have to use this. The NFL is not saying you have to abandon the onside kick. They're saying we're going to give you a choice. And I've always believed sports are better when you put the best athletes on the field. I'm a believer in the DH over a pitcher hitting. Why? Because you really got your jollies, baseball nerd, off Al Leiter? Madison Baumgartner is considered a great hitting pitcher. His career average is 177. I want an athlete. I want DH. I want a big slugger go up there and hit the ball out of the park against a great pitcher. I don't want pitchers hitting. I'm not a baseball nerd who, I am so sophisticated, I get the double switch. I get athletes. Put them on the field. I don't want my football games decided by a kicker and the hands team. I want my games decided by Patrick Mahomes and Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson and Larry Fitzgerald and Big Ben. and Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram and Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, that's who I want deciding my games. The hands team kept Green Bay's Aaron Rodgers out of a Super Bowl against Tom Brady. This is why the NFL gets it. Can you imagine in the NBA going to the finals and having the finals decided because you took the seventh guy off the bench to see if he could hit a half-court shot? That is the onside kick. I'm not even sure kickers like the onside kick. It's a total gimmick. Some of the greatest kickers in league history were not good with the onside kick because they were working on, you know, kicking, not a shtick. NFL games should not be decided. Aaron Rodgers should not be kept out of a Super Bowl because of a hands team. A guy can't catch a ball bouncing to him. We could have had an Aaron Tom Brady Super Bowl. So this is, you know, the baseball fans always get worked up on the DH and the pitch. Give me a designated hitter. Give me an athlete. Give me a 6'2", 245-pound DH that can hit a ball past, you know, 500 feet. I don't want to watch, you know, it's funny. Like Madison Baumgartner, he can really hit as a pitcher. He has a career average of 177. I mean, somebody told me Zach Greinke can hit. I looked it up. He hits 220. I mean, come on. Give me a break. Al Leiter hit 085. That's what you want to watch because you just can't get enough of the double switch. Strategy overrated. Athletes underrated. The NFL voting. Let's pass it. Give teams an opportunity to put their star quarterback, give Lamar Jackson the ball, give Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, give Aaron Rodgers the ball, Tom Brady in Tampa. You trail by four, fourth and 15. Make it happen. First down, boom, here we go. That's football. That's what I want to watch. I want to watch J.J. Watt lining up, chasing around Patrick Mahomes, fourth and 50, rolling right, almost has him, throw it to Tyreek Hill for 22. I'm not into the hands team. So this is great. Love it. They're going to put that on the table next week, and we got a new rule in the NFL. It's fantastic. Now, how fun is that going to be? Now, we may only see it 15, 25 times a year. I mean, but in the end, it's going to put pressure on coaches because the onside kick, 10% of the time you get it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the problem. The change in it made it impossible.
You know what fourth and 15 is? It's closer to 25, 30%. I think it's 28%. So it makes no sense not to go for it.
I mean, once you got to the onside kick, it was like, well, that's it.
The game's over.
Yeah.
It's like the PAT a couple years ago. Everybody freaked out. It's like, no, you have to watch the PAT.
Kick it was brilliant.
I mean, kickers now are, by the way, if you miss your first PAT, kickers go into the tank. The next 3 hours, kickers are struggling with even chip shots. So give me options as a coach. Let me choose. I'm not fear-based. I'll make a decision, and then I'll live with the repercussions. But don't tell me I have to do this when it's a shtick. I want to keep Aaron Rodgers out of a Super Bowl because I only have one option. A shtick kick and a hands team. What? I love this. If coaches don't vote this in, and they're afraid of it. Because all this really does puts the pressure on coaches to make the obvious call. Give Patrick Mahomes the ball.
Yeah, how would coaches not want this? The onside kick is almost impossible to convert.
Did you remember years ago when they added the two-point conversion? Goulet, you may remember this too. Coaches didn't like it. Why? I mean, of course you want the two-point conversion.
Right.
Coaches didn't like it. And coaches didn't like it because it put coaches on the hot seat. They were going to have to – it gave coaches options, and it was like,
But that's a little different. I feel like in this situation, it's a better option to be able to do the fourth and 15. Because the conversion rate for the onside kick is almost impossible. At least you feel like you have a chance in this situation.
Fourth and 15? I'm playing prevent? Absolutely. It's a wide receiver quarterback.
Right, and then if you don't convert it, it wasn't meant to be.
That's right. You trail anyway.
Right.
No complaint. You trail late. Your problem, not mine.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael Jordan got into a lot of people's heads. Isaiah's mad at him. The relatives of Jerry Krause are mad at him. Gary Payton's mad at him. Karl Malone's mad at him. Everybody's mad at him. You know, he beat him. I get it. But Scottie Pippen, I don't get. Scottie Pippen is beyond livid at Jordan for his portrayal in The Last Dance. Whoa. Time out. The documentary, Scottie Pippen unraveled in Houston. He unraveled the 2 years in Chicago they asked him to lead the team. Okay, the documentary never mentioned the gun charge he had in 94. They never mentioned that in Chicago. Okay, Michael Jordan, who doesn't give out compliments, is quoted saying in the documentary, quote, he helped me so much in the way I approached the game and the way I played the game. Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen, Jordan declared. I didn't win without Pippen, and that's why I consider him my best teammate of all time. I've never heard Michael give anybody a compliment like that. And three, the two low points of the doc for Pippen, he created. He admitted he wouldn't go into a game, doubled down on it. When asked, do you regret it? He goes, no, I'd do it again. What? With perspective, you would refuse to go into a game? Because you didn't have a play designed for you. And secondly, he acknowledged his words he delayed surgery because he wanted to have fun in the summer and throw his team under the bus. Those are Pippen's words. Michael Jordan said the nicest thing I've ever heard Michael say about another player. I mean, literally said, he helped me so much in the way I played and approached the game. I didn't win without Pippen. It's Jordan never said that about anybody. So what Scottie is, Scottie Pippen has buried Pippen in this. Scottie is what most professional athletes are. Super talented, but a two, not a one. To be the man, to be the leader, to be the guy, to be the president, Scottie's a vice president, and he was a great one. Arguably the greatest ever. But the minute the Bulls needed him to lead and him to deal with the media and him to, it didn't work. It worked for about 6 months. The second year, he unraveled. He went to Houston. They asked him to be the man. He unraveled. They asked him in Portland to be the man. He wasn't. Rasheed Wallace was the best player. And I like Pippen. I've interviewed him. I like him. I think he's the best vice president ever. But to be the man, you have to do the media crap. First at practice, last to leave. You gotta deal with the GM. You got to deal with the coach. You have to lead the game plan. You have to communicate with other players. And you got to make great decisions. Scottie's got a history of making some really poor decisions, and he's playing the victim here. I mean, I like him, but there's no way Scottie can be mad at Jordan for this. Jordan gave him the nicest compliment I've ever seen him give a player. He basically said, I don't win anything without Pippen. Has Michael ever acknowledged that ever about anything? I don't think he talks that well about Phil Jackson. So, I just talked about this earlier. 75% of people would rather flip a coin than make a decision. A study came out on that. When you're the man, and he was for 2 years in Chicago, he had to make really big decisions. And he made lousy ones. He made really bad ones. And then he refused to get a surgery. Who's that on? I think it's totally unfair to blame Michael for this. I don't think Scottie can play the victim. And for the record, I don't think he comes out looking terrible in it. I don't think he's a villain in it. I think he looks like a guy who was really good. Michael loved him, played hurt, was an integral part, much more important than Rodman. I think Rodman's stature's always been overplayed. I think Pippen comes across as the second most important Bull that Michael loved. Well, that's exactly the truth. Who made some really bad decisions when they gave him the baton to run the team. He's a two, not a one. That's okay. Leadership's hard. There are very few, you know, Russell Wilsons out there. There are very few guys that can just put it on my back. I'm 25. I'm going to run the thing. Not a lot of guys can do that. And I think Michael was uniquely equipped to handle that because his parents were so great. Then he got Dean Smith. Then he got David Falk. Then he got Phil Jackson. He had some of the great leaders in individual. He had the best college basketball coach, the best agent, the best pro coach, and unbelievable parents. He had so many great examples of how to lead. I think it made Michael a very good leader. Tough, but a very good leader. Perhaps Scottie didn't have as many great leadership examples, but you can't blame MJ for Scottie's decisions.
What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, 3 and Out podcast. Go subscribe right now. If you like Colin's show, you'll like mine because I'm talking all football. Coming up on this weekend show, Taysom Hill, the future quarterback, not so fast, and I rank my top four teams in the NFC and in the AFC, plus answer your questions on the Middlecoff Mailbag. 3 and Out podcast, go subscribe.
Peter Guber is one of the most impressive people in sports, an executive, an entrepreneur. He's a co-owner and co-chair of the Golden State Warriors, co-owner of the Dodgers, co-owner, executive chairman of the LA Football Club. I'm a season ticket holder there. Chairman, CEO, Mandalay Entertainment, one of the companies behind Last Dance. Former chairman, CEO of Sony Pictures. a remarkably impressive guy. I've had the good pleasure to interview him and meet him a couple of times. He sits right behind me at the soccer games. His seat's better than mine, it should be noted. Peter's kind enough to join us here on a Friday. Peter, first of all, how are things for you?
Well, it's a kind of living in a mess, you know. You're trying to figure out, you know, what the right rules of the road are, and you're trying to find the road. And this is a black swan event that happened, and so the result of that is that there's a great deal of uncertainty. And so my rule is, you know, with uncertainty, you know, there comes opportunity. And so you have to really look at that. Otherwise, you get stuck with the problem and not the opportunity.
You have been in so many different things. You've been in the movie business. You've been in the sports business. And I'm trying to think of the other business. You've been in the music business. Yeah. What are the similarities? Let's take sports. Is sports, you know, you're building a team. Movies, when you're the CEO, you're building a team. Are there similarities, sports to music and movies, or is sports its own animal entirely?
Well, there's a distinction. That's a good question, because there's a distinction. They're all audience businesses. We render experiences to an audience. That's our job. You know, whether it's music, movies, television, documentaries, we're rendering an experience. Now, the distinction between films and television is generally a captured experience. It's a curated experience. In sports, it's a live experience. In the movie business or the television business, if you make a film or a story, the same with Rocky, for example, the same person wins in Rocky. If you see it on television, on the airplane, a year later, you see it in a postage stamp, you see it in a movie theater, the same person wins. So the audience has a different kind of experience. In sports, in live sports, the audience is actually a participant, not a passenger in the process. So you have to deal with those audiences very differently. You have to make a promise that is delivered on as an experience, especially live sports. And that's my center post today. Live sports is what we need in the country and what we need back. And that is why it's so successful, because they feel, that audience feels, they do make a difference. They are really involved in the outcome. And so what you really need, that live sport thing, is separates it from other mediated sports.
You know, when you have to help make decisions on who to pay and who not to pay, it's like the movie business. There are a handful of stars that can clearly, Tom Hanks can drive audience. Nobody would dispute that, right? In sports, there are tough decisions where you have to tell great athletes, we're going to let you go and you may go to our rival. Are those painful situations for you? How difficult is it to lose a great talent because of a salary cap?
Well, first of all, you have to have a certain rule around the whole thing. If you get really so familiar and so close with your athletes and your team players, it makes it hard to have a clear and focused judgment of what you need to do for the team. In other words, you really have to keep some kind of a distance. You know, you have to recognize they have a job, you have a job, they have a career, you have a career, you have a business, they have a business. And sometimes they don't mesh perfectly. So it's hard if you get emotionally connected to a athlete on a team over the years, and you travel and you're around them and you know their family. And so it's really hard to say goodbye to them or make a move. In the movie business, it's 8 months in a trailer, or 8 weeks in a trailer, and you promise faith and good hope and let's get together, and you have a big hit, you never see them again.
Yeah.
So it's a very different kind of enterprise in terms of the relationship capital between you and the talent.
When you tried to recruit, I believe you tried to recruit Kevin Durant, and he was very successful, and he was winning a bunch of games, and he was going to come to a team, your Warriors, that had stars. What was the recruiting process? How did you touch him, Peter? How did you emotionally land with him, knowing he may have to sacrifice, Peter, shots and points and stats?
I think the process with Kevin was done with Bob Myers and the players. The players really worked on the relationship capital that was necessary to make him feel secure. It certainly wasn't me. It certainly was an attitude that was expressed through Bob Myers, the GM, through the other owners, and most especially through the players who went to see him. As you know, they went to the Hamptons and flew out there and expressed how they related to one another. Anecdotally, hearing it afterwards, not while I was there, it was a situation where they were really sharing with him And I use this expression because I've got it secondhand. They use the expression to him, you're going to make the difference. In other words, you will make the difference. And I think he did make the difference. And I think that what compelled him to come was actually the Warriors not winning in against Cleveland that year. Because I think if the Warriors won with Cleveland, I don't think he would have come. I remember at the finals that year, Bob Myers came in at the halftime to the owner's suite and said, and we were ahead by 6 or 7 points. It looks good. It looks great. Looks good. And I smiled at him. I said, we win. We don't get him. That was just my belief. Now, that came from decades of dealing with talent, not just sports, but all kinds of talent, music, film, television. This was a person when he came in and we lost the game. I remember saying to Bob, you're going to get him now. Because now you really have a narrative, a story, an offering, a promise to the premise to him as an athlete that he can make the difference, that the purpose of them being here is winning. And I think that while we might have won alone without him, that was the narrative that I think helped seal the deal that they did, the players and the general manager.
I would think with your acumen and experience, you would be able to predict certain things. So you go to the Warriors in 2010. The year earlier, they had drafted Steph Curry. We just saw him as a skinny kid from Davidson. We had no idea he would fundamentally change sports. You also produced Rain Man, which is one of my 10 favorite movies of all time. So I want to connect these two. Did you know with Rain Man, as you were making it, we have a massive transformative hit? Did you know with Curry early? Nobody watched them in college. We have a transcendent. Can you see stuff before it happens with a Curry or a Rain Man?
I wished I could. You know, I wished I could. You know, it's a little bit of blind man's bluff. You try to get the alchemy of success in films, television, sports, and movies is elusive. What gave you success one year at one time doesn't give you it the other. You use good judgment. You use your information, your data, which is really important, but data doesn't make the decision. It informs the decision maker. And so you have to make that leap of faith that it'll work. And I think there's some instinct to it. I can honestly tell you, Rain Man started out as a television movie. And then somebody read the script and gave it to Dustin Hoffman to read as a writing sample for another project. And Dustin said, I want to do the picture. And then Tom Cruise said, I want to do the picture. Serendipity. Serendipity happens. If you're in the middle of it, good things can happen. But if you're not swinging the bat, you can't hit a home run.
Oh, I love that. So when you go to you're at the Warriors, you're at the Dodgers, and then you get become part of the LAFC group. And, you know, you're a successful guy. Is there a message when you're part of an ownership group? Is there a message that it transcends the sport? It doesn't matter what sport it is. A certain message always works in professional sports.
You know, I have to. One of my closest friends is Pat Riley. He's an advisor, a coach, a mentor to me, and everything. And several times when I got lost in my sports business, he said, "Remember this: know what the main thing is, and always keep the main thing the main thing. If you don't know what the main thing is, you're going to have trouble staying on even your course." And so the idea of the main thing is to remember. If you're making a movie, it's in the script. It's in the director. You give them the tools and the resources, the blessing and the financial capital to be successful. And the same with the team. You put it together and alchemy has to happen. A magic has to happen generated by them. And then they have to get a little lucky. There's always a little bit of luck in this. You know, there's always a little bit of luck, maybe a lot of luck. But the idea is you have to be in the way of luck. You have to get yourself in position to be lucky. And that's hard work, tenacity, information, data, relationship capital, a lot of tools that are necessary to succeed.
Co-chairman of the Warriors, co-owner of the Dodgers, executive chairman, L.A. Football Club, CEO, Mandalay Entertainment, one of the companies behind The Last Dance, Peter Guber. So I want to talk about Last Dance. Michael right. was concerned that, oh, he'd look mean. I thought he looked of a willful and relentless, all the things I love from my pro athletes. It wasn't always pretty. I thought his relationship with his parents was formidable and amazing. So I loved how Michael came off. He was initially, Peter, a little concerned about his tenacity, the word you used. Are you surprised how much people watched it, fell in love with it, and actually he's now more popular this morning than he was, you know, 10 episodes ago?
Yeah, you know, the magic, you do the work and the magic happens, you get a little lucky. You know, there were three pieces of luck. We had good fortune, I should say. We got the rights. That's the first thing. You can't tell the story unless you get the rights, unless you convince the powers that be. That would be Michael Jordan and his group of people, his partners, all the people in his group, Curtis and Esty and the group there. You have to convince the NBA, Adam Silver. I mean, he worked in the entertainment part of the NBA for 20 years and saw a lot of this film stock and materials coalesce. You had to convince the companies that financed it that this would be successful. Now, the fact that you have a great track record, really had a great track record in sports media, sports films, and the fact that he was a super superstar were in our favor. That had the wind at our back. But you still got to get a little lucky. He had to sit down and be open. He had to be self-revelatory. He had to reveal of himself something of his inside. And then you have to get lucky with the other people that are involved. And then you have to get really talented filmmakers like Jason and Michael and everybody who can craft the material so that the narrative makes sense. Remember, this is 10 episodes over 5 weeks. You know, that's a lot of heavy lifting. Then you got to really get lucky, in this case, unlucky, that there was no live sports on television. We were the only game in town. Now, I don't think if we did the Peter Guber, Colin Coward story in those 10 weeks, we would be successful. But maybe it'd be watched because there was nothing really else on during that time. So this was a confluence of great timing, fortune, and great talented people, and a great subject. I mean, he's a incredibly interesting character. He's an incredibly compelling individual, and I thought he spoke his truth.
Yeah. Peter Guber joining us. I could sit and talk for Peter for hours. The athletes and actors, they're at some level, you know, Michael, he still will argue. I mean, he still loves winning. Just talking, he loves winning. And right. I don't know what creates that. Is it insecurity, vulnerability? I have no idea. Are actors and athletes driven by the same stuff to you, being part of a good team and winning? I mean, or are they really different personality types?
They're absolutely the same in terms of the curation of desire. They have a emotional component inside them of excellence. They want to be the very, very best. They want to put out their very best. And they want the very best talent to help curate it and create it and form it and collect it and make it work. And I think that's their similarity. They're different things. If you have, you know, if you have a great performer like Michael Jordan or Steve Kerr or Steph Curry or a newscaster, media caster like yourself, or a star like the great baseball stars of our eras, they all are about excellence. How do I make my craft excellent? Now, some of them get a little crazy and some of them go off the rails in other parts of their life. Makes it interesting. You know, the story is they're not all vanilla, and that's why we both have jobs. I got to manage some of them and you got to report on some of them.
That's funny. You have had more than 50 Academy Award nominations. So you wake up in the morning. What would make you happier? Knowing that you're in the NBA Finals or the World Series, or your movie got an Academy nomination for Best Film, what gives you the bigger high?
No, something other than that would give me the bigger high today. You know what that is? Butts in seats. Fans in stands. That would give me, that would be high octane result for me. And I think that's really the most important thing. We have to relieve the pain and give the joy and create the environment to get that back to where it was very quickly.
Yeah. You know, you do some movie business. I saw a study the other day that most people would rather not go to a movie theater. They want to watch stuff at home, and you guys will figure out a way to make money in the music business. Life is crazy. It's amazing to me. I grew up in theaters. I love the movie business. I still watch every documentary that comes down the pike. The sports business is changing, and people like, you know, people like watching stuff at home, not just games. Are you ever shocked by how fluid society is? Tech, the changes. If you'd have told me 10 years ago I was going to get into a car with strangers and they take me to a restaurant, it's called Uber, I would have said you're out of your mind. You've been a developer, you have been an investor in many of these companies. Is there a rule? I mean, are you shocked by how much change your life has seen in the last 10 years?
It is shocking, but what you really have to remember, I'm in the experience business. I'm in the audience experience business. I have to render an experienced audience to capture their attention. I have to aim at their heart, then their mind, then their wallet. So I literally have to figure out a way to engage them. The engagement of the audience is the success in our businesses. And sports is a tremendous engagement element. You have to engage them in many different ways. The music, you have to engage them with the food, you have to engage them with the seating. You have to have an experience that gets them to decide 2.3 days before, drive 10.5 miles, wait 10.6 minutes to get in the seat and watch a game and participate in the game. And they don't leave in 1 minute or 1 second or 1 day, or if they get behind three runs or four runs or 10 baskets, they don't leave. In the television or media business, you are 1/4 of an inch away from being disassociated from your product by that thumb on their finger in an instant. If they have a burp or they have to go to the bathroom or they get a telephone call, you're out of business. So you have a much higher challenge. But the reality is both of those systems live close together. There's nothing like the tribal necessity in our society of that social cohesion of all the fans cheering and screaming and believing they make a difference in a football game, baseball game, basketball game. That is totally compelling. That's 50,000 years of training. So we're not giving it up because some mother has decided that we're going to have to quarantine everybody forever because of a virus.
Yeah. Peter Guber, absolute pleasure talking to you. One of these days, I'm at LAFC and turn around and see you often. I'm happy for your success, and thank you so much for taking time for our show.
Thank you. Always listen to you. Love you. Good luck, and stay healthy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Big media companies, like the ones I've worked for, like to hire young people. Young people can be have a lot of energy and sometimes be a little more affordable. When you get to be like me, where you're older and more, you know, lucrative contract, companies are just hoping I walk outside and get run over by a bread truck and never have to pay me again. But as it is, Goulet, iJoy, put a show together, people like it, blah, blah, blah. The knock I have on the American media is with all these corporations trying to get younger and cheaper, a lot of the people are hardworking but have no historical context at all. ESPN... and I'm not going to mention names, but they had the beat writer for all the NBA teams give an all-time starting five. Yes, we're that low on content for NBA teams. Your all-time starting five. The Warriors. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and Wilt Chamberlain. The hell? Rick Barry averaged 26 a game at forward. He was pre-Larry Bird. He was the best passing big. He was pre-Larry Bird. He was ornery. He was feisty. He played defense. He was a leader. He averaged 26 a game. He was the best free throw shooter in the game. This guy once hit 8 3-pointers in a game when nobody shot 3-pointers. Now, he was a Houston Rocket while he did it. Forget Chris Mullin, who's better than Draymond Green. Draymond Green, in the half-court set, people will leave him open. They'll just leave him open. And I like Draymond Green. He averages 7 a game. He works for the Warriors, but I'm not picking on the writer. Did you watch Rick Barry play? I watched the NBA in the 70s. Rick Barry was Larry Bird before Larry Bird. He's not as good as Larry Bird, but it's not that far behind. Feisty as hell, shooter, free throw, passer, great player. The second thing that drives me crazy with the media is they don't like hate mail. Ooh, I just want to say stuff on the internet that'll make me popular. Make a call. Pick a lane. Have an opinion. We're in the opinion business. So they put the Lakers team out. I'm not picking on the writers. I don't know who they are. I don't want to know. But the Lakers all-time team is Magic at guard, Jerry West at guard, Kobe at guard, Kareem at forward, and Shaq at center. Three guards, two centers, no forwards. That's not a basketball team. Pick a roster. Who's a forward? Who can guard a forward? Three guards? Jerry and Kobe on the floor? And two centers. No, the Lakers' all-time team is Magic at point, Kobe at shooting guard, LeBron. Don't tell me LeBron hasn't played enough. Kawhi made the Clippers team. He's played 9 games. LeBron, small forward, Worthy, big forward, and Kareem, the center. I don't care if I offended you. That's the best Laker team of all time. Second team, Gail Goodrich at guard, Jerry West at guard, Elgin Baylor, Pau Gasol, a forward. And if I was one of these media people, ooh, Wilt or Shaq, I don't know which one to pick. I do, Shaq. Now, both had a lot of success off the court differently. I'm taking Shaq because I think Wilt was a total flake and underachieved, even though he scored 100 points a few times, you know. So, you know, add some context. Draymond Green over Rick Barry. I mean, come on. And you got your all-time Laker team has three guards and two centers. Really, that's an interesting. Kareem and Shaq on the floor at the same time. The other, you're playing other teams that have wing shooters. Who's going to guard them all? Who's going to handle the ball here? Come on, man. Make a call. You'll get hate mail. So what? Hate mail's fun. It's kind of fun to poke miserable people in the ribs. I got to be honest with you.